Wednesday, November 23, Socceroos second half just kicking off. 2-1 France leading us, and we're at the Stade Hotel in Manly, and just next to where Tommy Trbojevic, of course, had his infamous sprint down the Corso,
yep.
And where Dean Bulldog Ritchie has pulled down how many scoops here at the Stade. Bulldog, morning to you, mate.
Yeah, morning all. Back at the Stade. Gee, I wouldn't want to get a quick look at some CCTV down here over the years.
Was this one of your haunts? Yeah.
This is, well, I'm not saying it was, it still is to some degree, but not as much as when I was young. But
what do you do,
the round bar's always great in here.
Yeah, where do you sit? Where do you sit?
A lot of the old boys used to sit in the round bar, Clark.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of the old Manly League and Manly Marlin ex-players.
Was it a Manly hangout?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. As I've got older.
As in the footy players. I'm talking
Yeah, I know the Manly Seagulls used to have their end-of-season drink down here quite often.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an iconic pub, obviously.
It's one of the favourite club cricket games of the year when you play Manly. Play at Manly Oval and then shower change straight
here. Straight to the Stade.
One of the best games of cricket you can play. Yeah. Win, lose or draw. You're either celebrating or drowning sorrows.
I've never been here that many times. I think I've been here more times for work than what I would have just turned up and had a beer here. I think I've only been here once to have a beer.
What about Rob... The publican, as we walk in, comes over and I go, hey, hello, mate. He goes, oh, Clark, you won't remember. I go, I remember your face. He goes, yep, from the Sutherland Shire days.
Now, he
used to run Northies. I was like, okay, time to go.
It's good to see a couple of your mates down here too. I didn't know they were great soccer fans.
A couple of mates out there who are on the schooners. And I don't think they'd know what the round ball game was. They've just found out that the pub's open. There's schooners on offer. I'm down.
He's wearing an atmosphere.
So good.
He's wearing his Wallabies jumper, for goodness sake. But hey, if there are 6 a.m. schooners on offer,
that's unreal.
Don't you love that with Australians?
Most blokes
you can find a decent reason to have a beer early.
Hey, they're going the bacon and egg roll. Bacon and egg roll with a beer. Oh, my
you
God.
You've got to love it.
Not your guys, Loz, did they meet somewhere beforehand?
Yeah.
Got to have a pre-drink.
But it's 5 so strange, isn't it? Well, you've got to find a reason. And there's only has to be just a half-decent reason. And everyone jumps on board. It's a good excuse.
Yeah, well, let's go.
We
might duck
out
there later. What do you reckon?
I drove.
Okay.
Got my car.
Mate, you can't tell me in the old Junie days you didn't have a couple at the early opener.
You're allowed a couple. Two in the first hour, isn't it? One every hour after that.
When I was a young bloke. Yeah. Oh, I was only 16, 17. I left Junie when I was 16, 17.
Come on, mate. You wrote his book.
Yeah.
No, I knocked it back. Knocked it back. I don't think the attention to detail would have been conducive to a journal.
Well, Bulldog can't write that book. We've always spoken about the book with inside the book.
There's another book that I want to write one day.
Oh, yes. Mm.
Yeah. What I call the real book. Exposing the real Laurie Daly. Oh, isn't he lovely ever
since? The truth.
Mm. Such a lovely boy. Oh, you're right. You're dribbling.
He actually did just dribble. What about the scenes at the airport yesterday with the Samoan team coming back into Sydney? And they were there from 5 a.m., people driving from here, there and everywhere with their flags and singing songs. It was awesome to see.
Yeah, it was terrific vision, wasn't it, Mitter? Mm. It's an extraordinary nation, aren't they, when you think about Samoa? They're so small. I think the population's only like 200,000 actually in Samoa. But those scenes, don't recall a more patriotic nation or nations in the Pacific Island nations. I mean, to be fair, would we have got that many at the airport?
No.
And we won the World Cup.
No way.
We just don't do that, do we?
I'll tell you what,
Clark, you won the World Cup. No. We just don't do that. When we do succeed.
We used to. Ticker tape parades and all that sort of stuff. But
I'll tell you what it has shown me, though, Bulldog. We need to do more with the international game. We need to do more, play more football between Samoa, Tonga, Fiji. I think we do anyway.
Loz, we've just had a tournament which I thought was a pass mark. Sorry, it was nearly a goal.
You get caught out.
I know.
France
I know.
Are laying siege to the Socceroos at the moment.
You know what they lost? If we don't have a backup plan now, the whole World Cup to me was, I wouldn't say a waste of time, but it hasn't taken us to the promised land.
No.
Next year, there's got to be backup games for all these nations. If we don't see them play for another 12, 18, 24 months, then what was the point of trying to promote the World Cup? Mm. There's got to be a plan in place. But, of course, the problem is, when do you play these games?
Yeah, well, that will be a big issue. But for me, Origin has been such a great product. But I think international football now can be another revenue raiser for the game.
Yeah, but they got rid of the rep round.
They did.
I reckon that was a ridiculous decision. That wasn't the perfect time to play those the Samoa v Tonga match. Fiji v PNG.
You could have perfect Samoa Tonga every year. I reckon the interest and the passion will be there to justify that game every year. And I reckon you could take it to any venue and still pack it out. That's how passionate they are.
You could take it to Australia, you could take it to New Zealand, you could take it to Tonga, you could take it to
100%.
Samoa, wherever you want to take it, I agree. But I think they have to be exposed more and get an opportunity to play with each other a lot more. And I think that will help them when it comes around to World Cups. Because just putting them together in a World Cup year, for me, is not right. I think they've shown enough now that we have to support them. And there's an opportunity for them to play more games. But, again, you're going to have the players, which I'm sure would agree to it, but then the clubs, what would they say?
Well, rugby league's full of self-interest. It always has been and it always will. And the clubs, as much as they love the passion, they're more thinking about their own clubs and the potential of injuries, etc. So there'll be a lot of balking at that level. But I just feel we have to come forward now with some sort of itinerary that maybe spans the next 24 months to say, right, here's the test matches. This is the follow-up to the World Cup. Otherwise, the whole World Cup and promoting and pushing and trying to expand the game just goes back
to where
we were.
Was it a success, Bulldog, the World Cup? Like, we talk about it every day, so you know it's on. So you would, certainly see results. But even the time difference here in Australia, would you say it was a success? And even the final, like, awesome that Samoa made the final, but the game itself wasn't great.
For me, Clarkey, it was a pass mark.
Yeah,
that's how I put it.
Okay.
As a journo in rugby league, there's an expectation that you have to promote and like everything, but it's not what we're about. You've got to give an honest appraisal.
Yeah,
I thought the two semi-finals were fantastic. I thought the final was a little flat, which is what we thought would happen. Laurie, you agreed with that. And I thought a lot of the pool games were average with blowout scores. So I'm not going to sit here and wax lyrical about how great it was, because I don't think it was.
Yeah.
Was it a pass mark? Probably. The crowds weren't great. Financially, I think they might have broken even, maybe made a few bucks, but it wasn't a cash cow.
Well, it's only 3 years until the next World Cup.
Correct.
So where do we go between now and then? Because it's going to be played in the same time zone, because it's in France. But can you see it becoming bigger than what it has been in the past? Or do you just think we'll just let it roll on until the next World Cup and then we get excited about it again then?
The Pacific Nations, Laurie, have given us a new element to international rugby league. We've now got two, three more nations that can be competitive, highly competitive in every game. That's great for rugby league. So we've now got, say, five or six nations. But I just don't see how it's going to grow any further. We've been trying to grow rugby league since Dally Messenger in 1908. It hasn't worked. We don't have the money. I'd love to take it to the States. I think it would be a success in the States. You only need 1% of the market in America for it to be big.
But is that the game you take to the States rather than an NRL game?
But the problem with the States, though, Laurie, they've done it before, and it goes back to what I said previously. There's no point taking one game and then dropping off. But do we have the money to make it a sustained success, I'll get that out, in America? That's the hard part. Because if you take one game over there in the next year, Loz,
for
round
one... But some people say, why waste time and effort in going because of that
valid point. Valid point. Depends whether you want to expand or do you want to take that money and put it to grassroots? Do you want to put it into country rugby league? There's only so much in the pot. How do you want to distribute that money? And is trying to grow the international game, quote-unquote, wasting some of that money which could go to country rugby league? It's a debate for another time, but I get both sides. But I just think having one-off tournaments and one-off games in America, for example, unless you're going to follow it up and try to really ram home the game, I think it's just wasting time.
Well, you're right. But just to see the reaction of the Minnows, Tonga and Samoa, over the last couple of years, and then to see famous people like The Rock get behind it. I mean... He's so powerful over there in America. If you took the Samoan rugby league team over there to play Tonga. I'm sure it'd be a success.
Oh, 100%.
I think that'd be more of a successful game than possibly an NRL team going over there. I think there'd be more support for that.
You've got to remember too, Laurie, that a lot of these newer nations...
I hate when you call me Laurie.
Was. Mm. Well, I've got a few other names over the years.
Yeah, I'd rather you call me them than Laurie, yeah.
But they don't essentially have strong local competitions in those countries. They're all Australian-based who are going to those countries. It's like Lebanon, Tonga, Samoa. Do they have strong and burgeoning competitions in those countries, or are they just transplanted NRL players with heritage for those countries? Mm. And if there's no competitions there, then there's another challenge. Do we start to get a strong internal competition in these nations to try to keep the production line moving forward?
Yeah.
And not just relying on all the NRL players, so to speak.
Just putting this match in perspective, France and the Socceroos, the French side said to be worth somewhere around $1.66 billion. We're worth, Loz, about $59
million. $59 million.
Gee, that's a disparity, isn't it? And you look at the rest of our group, Denmark, $542 million, Tunisia, $96 million. So we're certainly, I guess, the so-called minnows of the group, but certainly holding our own, though. Just 2-1 down, heading towards the hour mark. We've been under siege, though, at times in this match after we scored the opening goal. Craig Goodwin after 9 minutes, unbelievable start from the Socceroos, but, really poor clearance in defence, failed to clear our lines, and it was cashed on by the France to score the go-ahead goal courtesy of Olivier Giroud.
Can I let you know a little secret, Mido?
Yes. It's
a little personal secret. I was at Graham Arnold's wedding. There you go. That's my little claim to fame sitting here right now.
As a friend or Sticky Beak?
Page
as
boy?
As a friend.
Yeah, paparazzi or
it was
friend?
Up here, it was at Man.
Fair question,
he was, page boy.
Yeah, fair question. That's what I'm saying. Is it like, is that
even
the
though,
old,
even though he's 22.
Bulldog was the source. Source
said. Little bloke handing the ring up. There you go.
Little
you
photo.
A bit of a
hiding, hiding in the bushes taking photos.
And you got Larry, Moe and Curly taking pot shots.
So you were actually invited to his wedding?
Well, how else do you think I got there?
Well, so I'm saying, were you hiding in the bushes taking photos or what?
I'm good.
A fair question.
Arnie.
Have you been sitting on that for a long time?
Yes.
Why did you just produce
because
that now?
Well, did you message yeah, him to wish him well for the tournament?
No.
So you're not good friends?
Do you have a fallout?
No.
Oh, have you had a stink?
No, not at all. No, he's a good friend, Arnie.
To me.
Why did you just say that, though?
Because the Socceroos are playing. Did you find it interesting?
Well, if they lose, you're going to call him? Just to...
If they win, I'll backslap.
Yeah.
Arnie forever.
Yeah, I knew you could do it.
Arnie forever.
Yeah, those critics, they rate you off.
Those media types. In the media.
Yous.
Journos.
Yous in the media.
Jeez, it's a tough crowd here, Bulldog.
I know. This is inside.
Fair question, though.
Can I say to you, well, you went to Arnie's wedding. I met Arnie one day.
Oh, can you two give it? Who cares, mate? Who cares?
He gets up in Forestville because of his great mate,
Slater.
Robbie Slater.
Yeah.
That's how I know him.
I walked past him as well in 1993. Sure it was him.
North Sydney Oval playing for the Spirit. Were they around there?
Yes.
Northern Spirit?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay, yeah.
Then there's another quick Forestville RSL regular visitor, plays pool up there.
Ooh.
The great one and only Ian Chappell.
Oh, okay, there you go.
A real Australian captain.
Couldn't agree more. Tough Australian captain. Could not agree more. See, he's done from commentary. Chaps, he's retired from his commentary.
He plays his pool now.
A few months ago, yeah.
Or snooker.
Yeah, he loves his snooker, he does.
Is he going any good?
Yep, very good.
Is he?
Yep.
Well, it looks like Kylian Mbappe, something's happened.
Was there a goal
there? Oh, look at that. Beautiful 1-2 from the French, but it's gone wide.
Similar how I used to play for Met South West Region back in the day.
You left foot kicker?
No, right foot kick.
Hmm. So left arm bowler, right arm batsman.
Right, left arm, right with my left, bowl with my left, throw with my left, bat right-handed, kick right-handed.
Can you, right footed, can you throw right with your right?
No.
Strongly?
No. Can't throw with my right at all. Very uncoordinated like that.
Really?
Can't do both. So bottom half is right side dominant, top half is left side dominant.
Golf?
Golf right-handed.
So when you...
Tennis left-handed.
Right.
Is that called ambidextrous?
That's exactly what it's called.
Remember there was a great player for Manly called Mike Eden in the 80s. He used to kick goals with both feet.
Yes, he did too.
Jeez. Won the Rothmans medal, I think, in 1983, Mike Eden. Went to the Roosters. Would kick
incredible
right on the right-hand side of the rugby league field. He'd kick with his right foot, and on the other side, he'd kick with his left foot. Yeah, round the corner
incredible.
Kicker.
Okay. Not great with my left foot at all.
He's down in Albury now, I think, Mike.
He's a solicitor down in Albury, Wagga Way or something, yeah.
We've just got some suggestions on, you know, how to sort out the international / rep schedule on the text line. Simon says, lads, forget rep round. Pause the NRL for a month mid-season. Play Origin 3 consecutive Wednesdays. Also have 2 other tri-series running on the weekends. New Zealand, Tonga, Samoa in one. PNG, Fiji, the Cook Islands in the other. They play each other once, then play a straight final on the final weekend. Could solve the eligibility debate, especially if the NRL can help with match payments. Cheers, Simon. Also, guys, the NRL should play Samoa v Tonga games as part of pre-season in February before our pre-season trials and play the game in regional areas of New South Wales or Queensland, says Michelle at Dubbo. Look, there's never just the right answer for this, is there? I mean, pausing the NRL for a month mid-season, the broadcasters would hate it. The NRL would hate it, wouldn't they?
I think the pre-season idea has got some merit. You can't pause the NRL for a month. That would lose all momentum.
Pre-season or at the end of the season? Because pre-season, probably going into the pre-season with that type of intensity, you run a huge risk of players getting injured.
Correct. The only thing I would say about pre-season would be everyone's pumped up, they're hyped up, they're excited. Once that siren goes on grand final day, there's a general acceptance that rugby league's over. I was talking, wasn't I, Mido? But if Laurie wants to talk, then that's fine.
How was Origin
you keep
received?
Talking, Laurie.
Sorry for interrupting. No, you're not. Dean, Origin, how was that received at the end of the year when it was played?
The ratings weren't great, Loz. The ratings weren't great. It was still State of Origin. It was always going to be big, but they were down quite significantly.
I thought a journalist would know that.
Well, I did. I just told you.
No, they were down. You didn't know the exact number.
No, I don't know the exact numbers, but they were down.
Good journalists would know that.
Now, Dean, you wrote a story, was it Monday, about the Panthers not committing yet to the World Club Challenge.
Yeah, at the moment, Andrew Abdo is trying to secure all the figures and numbers for the... It'll be prize money only, I think, so he's trying to get the prize money up to scratch. Penrith are claiming that the World Club Challenge against St Helens on the 18th of February is replacing the Parramatta trial, which would be quite a significant game, grand final replay, and with Fox now covering the trials, trial matches have got a new higher status. So Penrith seem to think that that game could pull in about 100,000 through corporate gate takings, merchandise, and of course then obviously a lot of people back at the club across the road. So they're saying we'd want at least 100 to play in that game, otherwise we'd have to go back to the bargaining table. And Penrith are still convinced that they are entitled to $400,000 for winning the premiership, which was the figure grand final winners got. It was reduced to 200 in COVID. Penrith are now saying, well, COVID's now gone, essentially. We think we're back to 400. The NRL has given Penrith 2, but they're now saying, we want our other 2. So with the 2 and the 1, Penrith are basically saying, we want $300,000 before we commit to the World Club Challenge. And I think they want to play. I mean, it's a great occasion. It's a prestigious occasion. St Helens are prepared to come out. But I think at least they want their $100,000 in prize money on the line before they commit.
Could they not play? Because haven't St Helens already said they're coming?
Yeah, they're playing 2 games out here, aren't they, St Helens? Aren't
they might be playing a warm-up game.
Dragons?
That was mentioned. Yeah. It was mentioned. I don't know, Clark. It's a really good question, but I guess they could if they wanted to.
And then,
I mean, you don't have to play.
And then somebody else would play.
Somebody else.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And you'd make a bit of money.
That'd be a bad look.
It won't.
You'd make a bit of money out of St Helens.
That'd be a bad look. Yeah, if Penrith pulled out, I reckon that'd be a bad look. I don't mind them having their beef now. I think they're in their right to have their beef, to get their money, what they deserve. And I've said a million times, I think the money for winning a GF, and I know it's come down through COVID, but it should be a lot more.
Yeah.
When you look at other major sporting events in the country, like I think about if you win a World Cup, for example, or an Ashes series or whatever it is, like, mate, you win a grand final, that's massive. You should be paid fairly.
Yeah, it was 2, Clarkie, during COVID. they'll return it to four, and now Andrew Abdo is going to the commission to double that.
I think that's so that's we're now talking about $1 million. Some, yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah. I think $1 million to win a grand
the
final
one
would
I think
be fair.
Team should be compensated for is winning the minor premiership. I think that's a massive effort.
It was 100,000, but I reckon the work that goes into that, the grind.
Well, what about the bonus if you won both?
You could do a bonus. Trouble. You like that?
Huge trouble. Yeah. Unbelievable stop from the Socceroos off their own line there. I know, they're about 10, 15 seconds behind now.
I reckon it's a goal. Where's I reckon he stopped that across the line. Mido, there you go. Give me a replay, please.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Whoever that defender was, I reckon he was across the line. They got video ref?
Yeah, VAR. No.
Give me a look at that again in replay, please.
Just cleared our lines there, but we are under siege here in the second half. Sorry, you can continue your conversation.
Goal.
Mbappe.
Yep. Gold who
Wait for the roar.
And how good is he?
That makes it 3-1. And you'll hear the roar here out the back of the stadium where we're at this morning. And Kylian Mbappe, the French superstar, has scored. So after 67 minutes, 3-1. Bulldog, you might have to go and join your mates out there and have a scoop after that.
Yeah. Why not? Take that French jersey off. I don't like seeing
11
that.
11 minutes sitting next to Laurie. I think I need a schooner. And it'll be full strength too.
Thank you, mate, for coming down, though. Appreciate
it's a pleasure. Thanks
you're
for having
a
me.
Dog. Oh, do you want to do the school board update, Clarkie?
No.
I really want to do it.
No.
It's 4-1. It's 4-1. It's gone a bit pear-shaped for the Socceroos here in Qatar this morning. 15 minutes plus stoppage time remaining. And we've swung the substitutions on two there now. Awa Mabil and Greng Kwol as well on Loz. But 4-1 after we took a 1-0 lead early. Olivier Giroud, who probably wouldn't have been starting. In fact, almost certainly wouldn't have been had Karim Benzema been in the team. But Benzema suffered that injury. So the 36-year-old AC Milan striker, former Chelsea and Arsenal striker, gets his opportunity, has now got a double. 4-1 France, and Giroud has equaled the great Thierry Henry as the leading goal scorer for France, both with 51 goals. But Loz, our defence being exposed.
Well, they're just starting to showcase all their skills, aren't they, the French? They're an unbelievable team. Their skill level is so much better than ours, obviously. But the Aussies, they continue to fight back. But we just haven't been good enough, you know, from what I've been able to sort of see on this TV today. You know, the French team, superstars all over the paddock, was always sort of our nightmare, wasn't it? The French living up to the expectation. We thought they may have started slow in this competition, and the other thing we're taking out of it was they came in with some injuries and players missing. But from what I'm sort of noticing in this game, they're still a very, very good side.
Oh, Mbappe's really starting to put his mark on the game as well. He had a searching run down the left, a beautiful ball back into Giroud for that second goal. So 4-1, the other results overnight, well, it was an absolute shock as Saudi Arabia beat Argentina 2-1. The other two games finished scoreless, one of those being the game in our group between Denmark and Tunisia. Mexico and Poland also finished scoreless. Last night in the cricket, the Aussies won convincingly against England, so they swept that three-match one-day international series. 5 for 355, we made a rain-reduced 48 overs. Travis Head, who was player of the match, 152 of 130 balls. David Warner, 106 of 102. That is Warner's first one-day international century for 1,043 days, in fact. Long time between drinks for D. Warner, but great performance last night. And in the end, England, chasing a huge 364, were beaten by 221 under the Duckworth-Lewis method. That is a huge defeat for England. And the bowling, well, 4 for 31 for Adam Zampa. The pick of them there. And 2 for 25 off 6 overs and 2 maidens for Pat Cummins. Sean Abbott had a couple of wickets. Mitch Marsh, a wicket there as well. Just saw some comments. Glenn Maxwell actually spoke to a Cricket Australia podcast about his, or detailed the extent of his broken leg pup. He was due to play in the next two Sheffield Shield games for Victoria, and he hasn't played a first-class match since 2019. Naturally, looking to hopefully get selected for that Test Tour of India, and the first test is in late February. But he conceded there's a high chance he won't make the India tour. He did a good job to his leg and ankle as well. He's done ligaments. He's snapped the bone right through. Some innocuous incident, he said. He said of all the stupid stuff he's done, this was... And he hasn't done anything. He couldn't believe the extent that he stuffed his leg in this one. But that's going to open up opportunities for that India tour, because I think that squad could look vastly different to what we see at home this summer. Well, maybe not vastly different, but there'll be some different names, won't there?
Well, in the squad there will be. Let's see what they do about the 11. I think we do that a lot when we go to somewhere like India. We've got ideas and plans, and then we get there and we generally stick with a pretty similar team. The thing they'll need to do is probably pick a second spinner. Someone like Glenn Maxwell, they might have thought was an option as the third or a spin bowler, play as a number six batsman, and be able to bowl some part-timers. But I think they'll certainly need to be thinking about who are they going to pick alongside Nathan Lyon in those conditions. And like any trip to India, you got to bat well. You got to play India's spin well. You got to set up the game in the first innings and then fight for your life in the second. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do now. I think it's going to be very hard to pick Maxi now, just with no first-class cricket. As you know, talented as he is, you go into a place like that, you need to be in form, and you need to have played, you know, test cricket or first-class cricket to have that time batting under pressure, ball spinning, ball reverse swinging. Before you get there. So, yeah, I think it's going to be really tough for Maxi. He's going to have an amazing recovery and get himself some four-day cricket or test cricket, if that's possible, before he even gets there.
Just on our spinners, and obviously we've always looked for one after Warnie and Nathan Lyon came along.
Yep.
And we're still worrying about who the next one in line will be.
Yep.
Well, what's the process in Australian cricket? Like, do we have, it's like spin academies? I know they used to have that academy where down in South Australia, wasn't it?
Yeah, Cricket Academy. We've got the Cricket Academy in Brisbane.
Do they have a specific one for bowling, like spinning?
Mate, I think there are some spin coaches around Australia that do a really good job, but yeah, Shane Warne was one of a kind. I think what we should look at is Nathan Lyon. I think Nathan Lyon is a real good discussion point. The way he came into the Australian team, statistically he wasn't that great when he was playing for South Australia. There was some talent there, but I remember when I had Captain Lyon, he couldn't bowl over the wicket. He did not feel comfortable. Playing for Australia, he did not feel comfortable bowling right arm over. He'd only bowl around to the right-handed batters. So that took time. You know, it took, for me, I think, again, when I took over the captaincy, we'd been through like 20-odd spinners since Shane Warne retired.
Yeah.
25 different spinners. So my goal was to try and get one bloke and then give him a really good opportunity. So to me, you know, there was even times where number 10 or 11 had come in, and I'd get Nathan Lyon on just to get him a couple of wickets so the selectors didn't drop him. They go, well, he got 2 for 60 instead of none for 60. Right, play another game. So he just got some consistent cricket, and now he's been brilliant, Lyon. He can open the bowling. He can bowl over the wicket, round the wicket. He's, you know, statistically very good. I'd like to see Lyon continue to own that pressure moment, so that day five spin Australia to victory. I think that's important for him this summer. To really stand up when the team needs him. Lyon's record in the first innings is phenomenal, but I want to see him have that same record in the second innings when he should be winning his games, and then we've got to find a second option. Is that Swepson, the right-arm leggy? Is it Ashton Agar, left-arm orthodox? But I think either way, Australia's got to find room for two spinners when they go and play in it, because India will pick three.
Yeah. As a spinner too, growing up, I suppose, you've got to have a lot of patience, because you can't expect the spinner at a young age to put every ball on the spot. And so you're going to get taken for
there's
runs.
There's no other leg spinner that bowled like Warnie. Like, you even look at McGill, who was a genius. McGill was nowhere near as consistent as Warnie. Warnie's accuracy was his greatest weapon, and then add that he spun it square. But that's what I'm saying. We can't have that expectation. Remember, bowling in India is very different to bowling in Australia as well. So if I was an Australian selector, I'd be looking at someone like Jadeja from India, who is a genius in India, but he doesn't have that much success when he comes to Australia. Yeah. Ashton Agar can be quite similar to Jadeja. He's fast, he's accurate, he spins the ball away from a right-hander. So to me, I'd be looking at someone like that as our second spinner. He also bats a bit.
Yeah.
You know, he's a very good number seven, number eight batter that can make some handy runs for us. So I'd be looking at, okay, there's a second spinning option. Someone like that who can bowl stump to stump, use the natural variation, bowl long overs, very good fielder, and can make some handy runs.
Yeah, but and again, but when you're growing up, if you're playing and you're getting carded all the time as a young spinner.
Mate, that's part you
lose
of it, though.
Yeah, but you lose interest.
You do lose
you?
Interest.
You go, oh,
but I think this is the thing Warnie always used to say. The key to bowling spin is to spin the ball. So as a young spin bowler, try and spin it and take wickets. If you go for 60 off eight overs, but you pick up four wickets, mate, you're in every team. You know, so look to spin the ball as a young spinner and look to take wickets. Don't be worried about how many runs you go for. And as you get bigger, as you get stronger, the more you practice, you'll become more accurate. But you've got to have the basic foundations of what a spinner requires.
Yeah, it's funny though too, because then if you're captain,
yep.
you're going to have the patience too, don't you?
100,
because
mate,
if you're going for runs,
100%.
You're going to be going, well, hang on, what do I do here? Do I stop the runs?
Hardest thing in the world.
Going to go for a wicket?
Yes, captaining a spinner, that's how you keep your spinner in your team. If you can't captain them the right way, they'll get dropped. You know, the key is you need to protect them. You need to bowl them at the right time. You need to, when they're on, make the most of it. You know, and that was the other thing that Warnie used to get frustrated at. Oh, hang on, the opposition are none for 140, and now you throw me the ball? Why don't you give me the ball in the third over?
Yeah.
You know, why don't you give me the ball when they're 2 for 20? Like, and that's the thing. Captaining quicks is a certain thing. There's certain tactics you got to have. Captaining spinners,
so your,
exactly
your
the same.
Your mindset, if a spinner came on to bowl.
If I'm batting?
No.
If I'm captain?
You're captain.
Yep.
So a spinner comes on to bowl. You know that they're just going to play him and work him around.
In a test match, yep.
Singles.
Yep.
That's fine, because you'll keep him on.
Yep.
Are you still keeping him on?
If they're hitting for boundaries.
If they're starting to come at him and they go, you know what, we're going to target this guy, we're going to have a crack at him when he first comes on.
Yep.
Are you still thinking that mindset, yep, we can take a wicket in?
I'd prefer that. I'd prefer the batter to look to take them rather than sit there and work singles. That's harder to captain. That's harder to bowl to. The key with spinners, I think you've got to allow them some time to get into the game. Give them 3, 4, 5 overs to get into the game, feel okay. Then you can play around with your fields. At certain grounds, looking at conditions, is it spinning? Is there natural variation? Is it bouncing? You might need in-out fields. They might need to have 3 guys on the boundary, but that doesn't mean you don't keep a slip. A bat pad on the leg side, a short cover. So you still got guys in catching positions. The key to, I think, to captaining spin is how are you getting a wicket? That's how the bowler bowls, but it's also, where am I putting my fielders? If the batter makes a mistake, I have to have a fielder in a position to take that catch or to get that wicket. That doesn't mean you don't have deep square leg, or you might have mid-off back or mid-on back if he's bowling to a left. It really depends on the batter and the conditions, and you've got to set the right fields to support your bowler as well. But attacking doesn't mean every single guy in the batter's face.
Yeah.
It might be a combination of some protection, so he's not going for 6, 8 runs and over, but then guys in for catching positions to get the batter out.
First test starts a week today in Perth between Australia and the West Indies. There's a market up for that. We're $1.22. The West Indies, $10. The draw paying $6 with tab. And that PM's 11 game against the West Indies starts today. It's a pink ball 4-day match at Marnica Oval in Canberra.
I'm saying the PM's 11 will beat them.
The squad for the PM's 11. Well, I see Sean Abbott's in the squad. He played last night. Would he be making the dash? Probably would.
He'll want to.
No, I bet he would.
All those blokes will want to play. You know, you will not want to miss this game. In regards to pushing for selection, that's what I'm saying. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope West Indies stand up, but I think the PM's 11 will beat West Indies, and that tells you what I think about this test series.
Well, I'm just seeing that... the huge result of the World Cup is we watch the Socceroos on the verge of a 4-1 defeat here at the moment. Saudi Arabia, they pulled off the shock of the tournament so far, 2-1 against Argentina. But, there's a report here, just reading this from news.com.au, that their star player, who collided with his own goalkeeper late in the match, is in a critical condition. So that is terrible news coming out of that match between Saudi Arabia and Argentina. Yasser Al-Sharani, who collided with his keeper late in the game, reportedly in a critical condition. So that is really concerning news out of that match. Brad Davidson, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are we going?
A bit down in the dumps after that great start. Now to be 4-1 down. Been tough to watch.
Oh, it has been, hasn't it? It was exciting for 20 minutes, but it would be nice if our World Cup campaign wasn't on the old, struggling after one game for once, wouldn't it? But anyway, that's the way it goes. We've just been completely outclassed, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, no doubt about that. And as far as racing is concerned, well, spring might be over, or the carnival at least, but there's still some feature races in Sydney and Melbourne this weekend.
Yeah, it's still shaping up to be a good weekend, isn't it, guys? We spoke about, obviously, the Starlight Stakes, the Festival Stakes and the ATC Cup, but this weekend in Sydney and down south as well at Caulfield. We've obviously got the Zipping Classic and a few other features there this weekend, the Kevin Heffernan, the Clip Stakes as well, and the Sandown Cup. So that's it at Caulfield this year. So it's shaping up to be a really decent card, and it's just a case of Australian racing these days, isn't it, that the carnivals might be over, but we tend to have a feature race on most race days now, at least some sort of listed or group race, and it's actually shaping up pretty nicely this weekend. So good weather in Sydney as well, so expecting another good track on the weekend, another fast track as we saw there at Kembla on the weekend, but yeah, hopefully the good weather can continue.
What's happened with Crusher Callow?
What a 3-month ban, Loz, and a fine of $4,500 there after pleading guilty to 6 betting-related charges at a Victorian Racing Tribunal hearing yesterday. They stem back to December 2013, 24 bets placed on thoroughbred racing, adding up to a total of almost $4,000, and also another allegation there of the Hoop failing to declare his betting accounts to stewards on 3 separate occasions while riding in Victoria. So that was the news yesterday. So Noel will be on the sidelines for the next 3 months, and we'll see him back after that.
See the news that the Dan O'Sullivan trained Barclay Square, which we saw win the Vase, finished sixth in the Victoria Derby behind Manzois, out for the autumn.
Yeah, unfortunate news there yesterday coming through, guys. A horse that's got plenty of talent, and I just don't think he stayed the trip in the Derby, but look, his form prior to that was super, winning the Vase and running well in the Caulfield Guineas, but unfortunately picked up a pedal bone infection there at out in the spelling paddock, and that'll require surgery. So we'll start to, I guess, hear news filtering through in the next couple of months of certain horses missing the autumn due to, you know, unfortunate mishaps. But yes, it'll be around before we know it, already almost in December. So unfortunate news there, and we'll have to wait probably till later next year to see Barclay Square back in action.
Do you like anything at Warwick Farm today, Dover?
Yeah, I've gone race 5, number 5, Vindication, guys. I think he sets up well there today. 2 runs back have been terrific. Just beaten by Escalatus first up, who's gone on to run really well in midway grade. And then the other day, he was just edged out by Star Beretta, who's gone on to win in Saturday grade. They get the rest as well. And I know he's drawn a touch awkwardly there today, but one turn, I've got no concern with that. They just keep him out of trouble out wide. Even if he sits 3 wide there, there's no issue being the one turn. So Tommy Berry takes the mount, third up on the home track today, dry track 1100. It ticks a lot of boxes, and it's more of a sort of provincial race. So for me, happy to be with him. Race 5, number 5, Vindication is the best of the day at Warwick Farm.
Okay, that's $2.80 with Tab. Race 5, number 5 at the farm, Vindication. Davo, have a good day, mate.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Cheers.
And Brad Davidson there. We've got about 3 minutes left of stoppage time here, but France lead the Socceroos 4-1. In Qatar, Aaron Moyes just picked up a yellow card. The news is coming up next.